Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you all. Buying a property is not an easy process, and to be fair, most people probably don't expect it to be. It's time-consuming, you know, trawling through listings on Domain and Real Estate during the week, plus, you know, attending open homes on Saturday and Sunday. That can all take up a decent chunk of time. And then it can also be emotionally draining. Finding the right property itself is hard enough, but then you'll probably be in the position where you need to beat out other interested parties in order to secure it, which might not happen. So you've got to tank that setback in your stride. Definitely haven't done this myself recently. Anyway, that's all to say that it can be a lot. What people might not know, though, is that there are actually professionals out there who can help with the buying process, and not just for investment properties, also for owner-occupier homes as well. These are called buyer's agents. So in today's episode, we are going to run through all the various things that buyer's agents can and can't do to help buyers, how much they will typically charge for their services, what to look for and avoid in a buyer's agent, and we'll finish off with some tips for budding buyers. And to do all that, I am very pleased to say that we are joined today by Michelle May, the founder and principal buyer's agent at Michelle May Buyer's Agents. Michelle, welcome to Friends of Money.
Hello. What an introduction. That was amazing.
I hope I set the scene for our chat today well enough, Michelle, but
it's fantastic.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, well, I hope I can deliver. I mean, I'm under the pump now.
Oh, definitely. Definitely pressure's on. Michelle, before we jump into some of our other questions today, I think it'd be great to focus on you for a second. So how long have you been working as a buyer's agent? You know, where is your agency based, and what sort of buyers do you kind of typically work with?
Yeah. So I've been a buyer's agent since 2008, which, you know, is a fair while now. I was probably one of the OG buyer's agents in Australia. I was very lucky to get an apprenticeship with really the true OGs in Brisbane when I first moved to Australia. I knocked on their door and said, please give me a job. I was an apprentice really for a year and obviously getting my license, etc. And I worked for other agencies before setting up my own agency 7 years ago. Now, we focus on the Sydney metropolitan area, and we have found that we are now venturing, you know, usually our cutoff was in the west of Sydney, but as buyer demand has, you know, grown, we're now doing St. George River area as well, a little bit of the Sutherland Shire, eastern suburbs, Lower North Shore, but my team and I service those areas. Besides that, I also have a podcast called The Buyer Side Podcast, which is aimed at really educating those people that are new to buying, you know, talking about really practical things like looking at what do you need to look for in a strata report? When an agent says this, what do they actually mean? How to get ready for auction, all that kind of stuff. So they're short, sharp episodes that hopefully will bring a lot of value to those unassisted buyers out there.
Sounds fantastic, and would definitely recommend if anyone else would like to go and check that out, especially, as you said, Michelle, for people who are just about to enter the market for the first time, because as someone who has just done that, as the painful intro or the pain in my voice in the intro might have indicated, it is a process, I will say that, and that is
really
all I will say on it.
It's a journey. And to answer your question of who do we look after, I think there's a little bit of a myth that using a buyer's agent is only for the wealthy and famous and rich and famous. In fact, we work with a lot of first home buyers, and I actually think that taking that first step on the property ladder is the most important one, because if you buy a dud, that really can really change the whole future of your property journey. You know, I mean, just to think about all those new apartments or that have been built in the last 20 years, the build quality is not the same as before. And so young buyers, you know, fresh buyers will fall for the traps of the new kitchen and the ensuite and all that kind of stuff without really understanding the risks that are present in the strata report and the build quality and the running of the building, for example. So we actually really love working with those buyers because we add so much value to the journey, as well as people who have bought numerous times. We do have the rich and famous who remain anonymous, but we also, you know, across the board, we service a range of different clients.
I was about to ask you for names, but I guess that's not going to happen.
My name's sealed.
fair enough. You've already given us a little bit of a taste of what a buyer's agent does there then, Michelle. But can we just start with the basics and get you to kind of expand on that? So what do buyer's agents do? And to be really clear, we are definitely not talking about the kind of selling agents that people probably might be more familiar with, right?
So a sales agent represents the vendor. A true buyer's agent, because I know there are people out there that are dipping in both pools, a true buyer's agent will only ever represent the buyer. So I am working in the best interest of my client, the buyer, and I will always look out at, you know, at the transaction from that perspective. I'm protecting their rights. I'm protecting, you know, the quality of the property that they buy, the risks, the pitfalls, and through an enormous amount of due diligence. So a buyer's agent typically will offer different kinds of services that will go from anywhere from just auction bidding, so being the hired hand on the day. If you're simply too nervous, you know, and are not familiar with an auction process, then they can come in and they will represent you on the day and put their hand up and help you, you know, signing the contract, etc. To you finding a property and then they come in and do the whole evaluation process and then help you decide a strategy whether to either go to auction or try and buy prior. That's when you have found the property yourself as the buyer. But then there's also the fully comprehensive search, which is where, you know, you give us a brief and a budget, you know, an outline of what it is you're looking for where, and then we take that and run with it. So we do all the legwork for you. You know, that means uncovering off markets, pre-markets, doing all the inspections, giving you, you know, a video, photos, an outline of the positives, the negatives, and then we do all our due diligence. So that means comprehensive price evaluation, looking at, you know, the pitfalls that could be detrimental to your enjoyment of living there, or also the future value of the property. So think about things like infrastructure projects, development applications, rezoning, flooding, bushfire, you know, all that kind of stuff. We really take a real comprehensive look at the property and then give you an advice as to, you know, you should or should not proceed and at what level price point would be a reasonable level to go forward. And then we also, you know, devise a strategy with, you know, the agent in mind, the vendors in mind, the market conditions, and go, okay, well, we need to move fast here because of XYZ, or, you know, we're better off waiting to auction and then snapping it up at auction. And that process keeps repeating itself until you purchase. And that could be, you know, a couple of weeks, it could be a couple of months, depending on, you know, the specificity of the brief, but also market conditions, you know, things like that. Because obviously, you know, you never know when the right property may come on the market for you.
Michelle, I think that was an excellent kind of run through of the various services that you can provide. So I think that's so helpful. One of the points I wanted to pick up on that you mentioned there, and this is something that's always interested me when I've written about buyer's agents in the past, is this concept of off-market listings. So what does that term actually mean? And do buyer's agents, I guess, really have access to a, you know, pool of properties that regular buyers don't?
Yeah, we really do. But I think it's really important because obviously, like, whilst, you know, my clients have been honing their skills in their chosen professions, you know, whether they're doctors or work in an office, or they're teachers, whatever the case may be, about which I have no clue. I have been buying property since the age of 22. And so I've been honing my skills and also, you know, honing relationships with agents and, you know, in the local area, I know exactly where to look for what, you know, who to talk to uncover those off-market opportunities. But I think it's really important for those that are listening to understand that the term off-market, because it is seen as something exclusive and, ooh, there's less competition and I'm going to get my foot in the door, I'm going to get a better deal. There's a lot of misconceptions about that because it's actually now being used as a marketing tool by sales agents. Domain, for example, they have an off-market portal, which the true meaning of an off-market is, of course, that there has been no marketing done at all. And it's a transaction between one vendor and one buyer, you know, and they get a deal done. As soon as there's any marketing involved, so as soon as you get an agent's email saying off-market, it's been sent to everyone in their database, people, which is thousands and thousands of people. So it is effectively just another open for inspection. And so strategically, a lot of those agents will use the term off-market for a two-week period where they just use their database. Okay. And if they can get a deal done in those 2 weeks, fantastic. Then the vendor hasn't spent the money on advertising it on domain and real estate and all those other portals. But they've very often already done the photos. They've very often already done the styling. Okay. So the idea is then that they get the premium that they want. Sometimes it is used also by the sales agent to condition the vendor because potentially the vendor has unrealistic expectations, right? If they don't get the premium, it then goes on the market. But don't forget that 2 week period, everybody's grandmother and their dog are coming through just like you are because they also got the email. So there's that to take into consideration. The other thing is also to remember that an off market doesn't mean it's a better property. It still needs to go through the filter of due diligence. It still needs to stack up financially. It still needs to, you know, make sure it's not in a floodplain. It's not on a major road, all those things, right? You still need to look at it and really take your time to ensure that you're not being sort of pulled in by the allure of it being an off market.
And where do you come across these off-market properties, Michelle? Obviously, the true ones. Are these through connections that you already have in the areas that you're kind of, you know, helping buyers buy in? Or where do they come from?
So they do come from sales agents also. Don't forget that. They do come from sales agents because as a buyer's agent, I speak their language. I have qualified buyers, people who have pre-approval in place, who are serious, obviously, about purchasing because they have engaged me and are paying for my services. Mm. So selling agents know this, right? And there are some selling agents who predominantly work off market with buyer's agents only. So obviously I'm on speed dial with them. So as soon as I have a client with a brief, I will reach out to them and go, hey, what have you got? And don't forget the good selling agents. They have been, you know, talking to owners over many, many months, sometimes years, to say, hey, are you ready to sell? Oh, I'm not ready yet. Okay, I'll get in touch with you in 6 months. So if they then have a buyer's agent in front of them who has a client who's ready to act, they may then go, oh, actually, I spoke to Mr. Johnson 4 months ago. Let me just call out to him and see whether he would be willing to show you through. So there's that aspect of it. I have been in my area in the inner west of Sydney for quite a number of years now. So I have a local community and they all know that I'm a buyer's agent. So, you know, they will contact me directly and say, hey, I'm thinking of selling. Have you got a client? All that kind of stuff. But also the marketing that we do, the social media, people know where we are. We're easy to find. So we have people from all over contacting us directly saying, hey, I'm wanting to sell. I'm not necessarily wanting to use a sales agent. Have you got someone? So there's different avenues how I find them and how they come to us.
That's so interesting. And as someone who just bought and didn't have access to that, it's fascinating that's out there. Michelle, before we get into some buying tips, I've got two kind of fundamental questions left about buyer's agents that I definitely want to, you know, run by you. And the first of these is how much should, you know, a prospective buyer, you know, put away, or how much should they expect to pay for the service of a buyer's agent? And I assume that there's a bit of a spectrum involved.
Yeah, look, there's three main ways on how buyer's agents tend to charge. There is the fixed fee system, which is what we do, which I believe is the fairest. It is looking at your brief and your budget and looking at the complexity of the search and going, okay, this is how much we're going to charge you. We do not have a time limit in our agency agreements because I do not believe that it's fair to put a ticking, you know, time clock above your head going, you have to buy within 3 months. So for us, we only take on clients that we know we can actually help. And so we charge a fixed fee. And that sometimes does mean that for a first, you know, a first home buyer, we bring so much education to the table, right? Which for us is more labor intensive, but there, we've got a baseline fee that we charge minimum for everybody. And then there are those buyer's agents that will charge a tiered system. So depending on where your budget sits, the fee will be higher or lower. And then there's the percentage fee, which could be anywhere between 1 to 2, 2.5%. Now, to me, I think any buyer's agents who charges that, I find it hard how they can justify this. I mean, to me, it's a complete conflict of interest because
this is a percentage fee we're talking about, right, Michelle?
Yes, correct. I mean, the more you pay as my client, the more I get paid.
Doesn't make any sense.
Take away the incentive to negotiate hard when it's probably the most needed, right? Because why would you try for the last 10%? Because, you know, it's actually cutting your income. So I would be weary of stepping into the buyer's agency, you know, boat with someone who does that. Same with the tiered system, because it would imply that the bigger your budget, the more I should get paid, which actually it's quite opposite. You know, usually the opposite is true. The bigger budgets are usually easier to satisfy, and it's a different type of client as well. So yeah, those are typically the three different kinds of charging.
Makes a lot of sense. Michelle, we are fast running out of time today, but before I let you go, I really want to kind of tap into your experience and yes, the knowledge that you have, that you've accumulated over the past, I'm trying to do the math now, 2008 to 2024. What's that? 16 years.
Yeah, gosh, don't say it out loud.
I know. Sorry. So I guess on that note, do you have any tips for buyers about the buying process in general? I guess, especially as you've been talking about, for people looking to, you know, enter the market for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's not, everyone started off all fun and games, and they love going to inspections and it's, you know, exciting. But, and I get that, I understand that, because it's, you know, buying a property is a very emotional experience and usually goes hand in hand with a life experience, you know, a new job, a new city, potentially your baby, etc. And you get lured in by the pretty pictures and the sales spiel and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's really important to take the emotion out of it initially and do your due diligence upfront. So make sure you go to a broker, get your finance approved before you start shopping around, really. You can do your research before, but don't fall in love with something before you have your pre-approval in place. I recommend looking at the sold section of the big portals and the agent's website, as opposed to what is for sale, because you and I both know that guides can, may or may not be accurate. Let's leave it at that.
Yes.
So rather than getting lured in, go to the sold section and then put in, say, the address, the area that you want to be in, and see, and put in your max budget, right? So say it's 800, whether, you know, 500, 2 mil, and see what you could have bought in the last 2 to 3 months, because then you'll see a real pattern arriving, right? You'll see it's all two bedrooms. If it's a three bedder, it's on a really main road, you know, big, busy road. So then you'll see, okay, I can actually only afford a two bedder. If you need a three bedder, do the map search and see where three bedders are all falling within your budget. Because then you can start your search with so much more focus rather than giving into that wishful thinking, which actually will work so against you, because you'll get to a point where you've been, you know, let up garden paths, you go to a couple of auctions, you miss out, you spend money on strata reports, you spend money on building and pests, and you never really had a chance in the first place. Then you get burnt out, you leave the market, you come back a couple of months later, the market has gone up. And in that time, there was something you could have bought, but you didn't see it because you were over it. You know, so you really got to ensure that you don't get to that point, because the other risk is that you'll end up buying something that you never would have bought at the beginning of your search, but you're so over it, you go, this will do. It's a little bit like the rebound boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, it's like, nah, this is not a good idea. So that's, you don't want to do that with a property, because obviously the costs are huge to get out. You know, you think of stamp duty, selling, moving, all that stress. So you got to get it right. So do that little bit up front. It'll help you.
I think that's excellent advice. And I think it really kind of emphasizes the bit that I was talking about up top, about the emotional kind of toil that the search process takes on people. You know, I've experienced that firsthand quite recently and can attest to the fact that the more realistic you are going in, the better it'll be, and the less likely, as you said, that you're going to dip out or find the process too overwhelming. Michelle, I think that's an excellent place to end things today. So thank you so much for joining us on Friends with Money. It's been a pleasure. And I 100% want to get you back on to chat about auctions and other bits and pieces in the future. So if you're keen, we'll definitely have you back before too long.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for the great questions. And yeah, I mean, once I get started about talking about property, you'll never shut me up. So
we'll have to expand the podcast just for you.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this episode of the Friends of Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends of Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, I am Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.